Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY, or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thank you.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. We are back with Woke Bros, a Friday Woke Bros. It is your illustrious Hoke co-host of this whole enterprise. It is I, Michael Aziz Mohammed Jabbar Abdul X Mohammed Brooks, along with my friend, comrade, compatriot, partner, fratello, all that good stuff. Big Waz, Woz Nilan Bray, Big Waz, what's up?
What's going on, Michael, man? It's good to finally be back, yo. Of course, want to send a quick shout out to everybody that came out to the LA Live show. It was live, it was direct, it was official tissue. It was great to touch down with, you know, the people who support us week by week, episode by episode. Of course, I noticed y'all did the Majority Report live out in Brooklyn. I thought that was pretty dope.
Yo, no, that was actually cool because I didn't even put it together in my head that we had, like, the two universes, like, that are bridged through you and I. There were two live shows. And it's cool, you know. You get to meet a lot of good people. It was great. And all the pictures I was seeing on Instagram of the Count of Things live show looked amazing, too. Lots of good people out and about. Lots of good times being had. Super producer Rob Lopez, he is steering the ship when he remembers to show up to the ship. Rob, I'm a bad.
Mike had a day. Let Mike have a day.
Yeah.
Rob had a day.
Rob can have a day. Rob's great. We know this. And we're going to keep the live shows coming. There's still a few tickets available to the Michael Brooks live show at the Bell House in Brooklyn. I don't remember how many they hold up, the seats there are, but I know that we're like,
I believe,
like, the VIP part is going to be packed. So I shouldn't say this because you still can. There isn't a limit on it. And I would, you know, buy a VIP. I'd love to see you. And obviously that's the more expensive ticket. But, like, I think, like, the VIP alone now is definitely at least 100 people.
And oh, wow. Then,
you know, a lot more, you know, after that with general tickets. So, look. The sketches are being recorded. Like, we're going to make that, like, a show, right? It's not going to just be, like, you know, the usual goodness we bring, except there's an audience in front of us. We're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to bring a little bit more of an edge to it. We look forward to seeing you there on February 1st. Of course, on March 2nd, there's the Count the Dings live show in Boston. Waz, take over. Tell them about that.
You know, we're doing, March 2nd at the Middle East in Cambridge, Massachusetts, man. That's going to be in and around the Sloan Analytics Conference, Dorkapalooza, as the one great Bill Simmons once coined it. You know, it's basically a weekend where sports people with an analytical bent show up to Boston and basically dork out with presentations, panels, like all kinds of people, coaches, GMs, former players, scouts. You can find all kinds of people within the realms of sports. And you know, it used to be just be basketball, but now it's definitely football, baseball. It's all kinds of sports. And guys just presenting different analytical goods, for lack of a better word. And so around that weekend, we're showing up to Boston, doing a live show at the Middle East. There's a decent amount of tickets left, but you don't want to slack. I know it's still about 6 weeks to go, and people are like, nah, you know, I'm still at the gym. I'm still doing my New Year's resolutions thing. I haven't really gotten to, you know, my leisurely stuff yet. But yeah, March 2nd is going to happen. We had a bunch of wonderful special guest out in L.A. Shouts to my man, Jake One. You know, he shared some beautiful stories with us. We had an amazing time with him. Yeah, man, you never really know who's going to show up at a Count the Dings show. So you don't want to miss that, man. Everybody who shows up.
Yo, real quick, I'm really sorry, man. I don't know if this is a problem for Rob, but you're cutting out like a lot. So I'm only hearing,
should I call,
like,
back?
Yeah, I'm not hearing. No. I'm only hearing.
God, is it messing up for you?
No, I heard Waz perfectly.
So it's just messing up for Mike. So maybe let's just get Mike's thing back.
Yeah. So it's probably
reconnect.
You, Mike.
All right, man.
See, are you on Wi-Fi?
We're sorry, The number you have reached is not in service. Please check the number or try your call again. This is a recording.
Yeah. All right. Make sure your Wi-Fi. Just close out your Skype. Reset it. Just let me know.
All right.
You can rejoin. You can actually rejoin. So.
Rewatching The Wire. The show is so fucking good. It's so intricate. So fucking precise. It's fucking amazing, bro.
Dude, I remember watching it when I was younger, but I don't remember it. Like, you know what I mean?
Season 2 or just The Wire in general?
Just like the first couple seasons. I remember watching it and just, I just don't remember it. Like, I have to sit down.
I want to go back and watch this shit. Trust me, bro. Like, and plus, because I was so young.
You know, I didn't really understand the mechanics of bureaucracy and politics and all the shit that goes into our institutions, right? Like, when you get an understanding, like, it's just human beings, you know what I'm saying? Like, we look at the, like, police force as, like, this machine, right? But really, it's just a series of people making a series of decisions that have, you know, ridiculous consequences, but it's just human beings, bro. Like, The Wire pushed that shit into such sharp focus. It's incredible, bro. So intricate. Detailed, like they show you how each piece is connected to the next one. Like, every decision has an effect, and it's like a domino. It's just fucking incredible, yo. Like, I know it's been said like a trillion times, but like, rewatching this shit the last few weeks, I'm just like, wow, this show is amazing. Like, at the time we thought it was incredible, but like, I don't think we understood how sick that show was.
Yeah, that show's incredible.
Like, just as a social commentary, just, like, on urban decay and shit like that, like, yo, too fun.
That show's incredible.
All right, can you hear me now, Mike? Is it?
Yeah, now you're all good, so let's just rock with it.
Okay.
All right, so we need to get to, you know, it would be, if it was almost anything else than what the story is, it would sound interesting if somebody said, hey, you know, the NBA, the New York Knicks specifically, and the Turkish government have an issue. I would say, huh, that's something I want to know more about. I like the NBA. I live in New York, and I studied abroad in Turkey. What's going on? But as a lot of people know, it turns out that Enes Kanter, who's the center for the New York Knicks, the Turkish government's put out an Interpol red notice on him, and they are actually accusing him of supporting terrorism, I believe is the language that they are using. And it all comes down to a relationship that they claim that Enes Kanter has with a guy named Fethullah Gulen. And this is a very weird story, right? So Fethullah Gulen, when I studied in Turkey, which was like in like 2007 in college,
Okay. And
the same government was in power, Erdogan was in power, and he was already like, you know, he's not our cup of tea, you know what I mean? He's a fucking religious conservative capitalist, right? So he was bad, but he was not, he wasn't fully blooming as the dictator he is now.
So Erdogan, he started off, he just, he's kind of grown into his role as full-on dictator, authoritarian, just straight up megalomaniac.
I mean, there's a debate about, you know, like, was this always the plan?
Plan, okay.
And also, he is a guy who, like, he maybe recently it's changing a little bit, but he's always won elections. Like, he's always had real popularity. Okay. So he kind of had the, like, you know, there's an election, however many years, 4 years, I won. Now shut the fuck up.
I get another to do what four I
years.
Do.
Yeah, you can try to beat me in another 4 years, but, you know, that, and he's just gotten worse. I mean, again, always bad, but even within his own party, any other voices that might have had any kind of clout have been muscled out. Academics are in prison, lawyers, journalists, political, the leaders of the Kurdish leaders of like the party you and I would vote for. It's called the HDP. They were put in jail basically for making speeches. It's a very, very, very bad situation. And anyway, so Fethullah Gulen, though, was a Muslim cleric who actually lives in Pennsylvania. Right. And when I was there, he and Erdogan were cool with each other because, you know, Erdogan's like a religious conservative Muslim. Fethullah Gulen is a cleric. He also a lot of charter schools across the United States are Fethullah Gulen charter schools. A whole, you know, can't get into all the details of it. Anyways, they had a falling out, and now Erdogan has flipped from he's my friend to he's our Osama bin Laden. And actually, Michael Flynn, who, you know, had the Russia focus around him, but what actually is totally is just public knowledge was that he worked for the Turkish government briefly, and he actually had this wild fucking proposal to go to Pennsylvania and kidnap Fethullah Gulen and send him to Turkey.
Extract him. So,
there's like a lot of wild shit with this, and they're claiming that Enes Kanter, without any real evidence, without any substantiation, the dude is a basketball player, you know, is a supporter. I mean, really, it's because he's – I mean, to me, it's obvious he said a few mildly critical things about Erdogan, but Erdogan's a megalomaniac, a dictator, a ruthless, you know, asshole, and this is the ringer he's putting him through. And I got to say, like, I'm not even trying to get into, like, we can go and dunk on Dolan in a minute, but, like, would you really want your well-being to some no small extent depend on fucking Dolan? I mean, shit.
No, not really. But James Dolan is the type of cat who I don't think would take kindly to people trying to get at one of his guys, right, so to speak, right? Like, you know, right, we've talked about this on the show before. Like, he stuck with his people, whether it be Isaiah or Steve Mills, through some pretty dark times, right? So, like, James Dolan is, like, although I wouldn't want him personally handling it, I think he has the means to be like, yo, we got to figure out what's going on with Kanter. Like, he's rich enough. He's connected enough. He could get the guy situated. I think more importantly for me is, like, like, the situation we find ourselves in. I have to use Barry as a direct comparison because he was the guy that was here right before. Like, this shit just would not stand if Barry was still the president, right? Like, it just wouldn't be allowed. Like, you don't just – you ain't going to tell us to extradite our professional players, you know, law-abiding citizens without, like, some kind of – like, they'll carry water for their allies who do terrible things, but there's got to be – I got to be able to carry this in public. You know what I'm saying? But our current regime, that's why I'm kind of afraid for Kanter. That's where I'm scared for him, where I'm just like, I don't know. Like, what's really stopping Trump from doing this? Like, realistically.
No, I mean, I don't – like, I agree with you completely, right? Because there's – the bigger picture of, like, the structure of U.S. foreign policy and being an imperial power, which is what we are, and all the terrible things that entails, and the difference between that and, you know, a fucking megalomaniac wanting to extradite an NBA player who offended him, and you have a president now where, like, Erdogan could get on the phone and be like, you know, in addition to, you know, like, being this really bad guy who threatens the Turkish people, I also heard that, like, Enes said you had bad hair. And so, what?
but we have, like, counterexamples of this, right? In the sense of, like, Cuban defectors, all kinds of baseball players and different athletes that have come here defected, and we've basically told Cuba to go fuck themselves, right?
Yeah, but that's a regime, but that's a government that we disrespect and try.
But that's what I'm saying. But that's what I'm saying, Mike. Like, let's just say, had it been, I don't know, Saudi, I don't know if we would have had that same attitude towards defectors.
Right.
Right? Like, right. That's the scary thing about this for me, for cancer, because it's like, you know, yeah, we'll thumb our nose to somebody like Cuba who can't wield any influence over us whatsoever, and we already don't fuck with them. Yeah, we're just like, fuck you and your extradition requests and this, this, that, and the third. I don't know how that goes over when it comes to our current regime and the Turkish government. You know what
yeah,
I'm saying?
Yeah, no, that's – well, not totally, and not only that, like – in a weird, you know, do you remember a couple years ago? I think it was right after Trump was inaugurated, and Erdogan was in the United States, and you know, he was in Washington, and he was met with protests because, you know, of course, there's a lot of people that want to protest the mother.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
And he sicked his security detail on the protesters. They beat the shit out of these people in Washington, D.C. He stepped out of the limo and, like, literally, like, adjusted his tie and looked at it like, yeah, that's right. And
you know, in D.C., he's doing this to protest.
Washington, D.C. And, like, again, I am the last, like, you know me. I'm not Mr. like, rah, rah, rah. But, like, no, you can't do that. Like that.
You don't come to America and do that. Sorry,
your fucking mind. And then later, you know, they got some names of the security detail, and apparently they're barred from entering the country or some bullshit. But the truth was that the park police didn't know what the fuck to do, and there was no actual response to this fucking guy literally sicking his thugs on peaceful protesters in the middle of the fucking capital
of America.
And that's an irony, like, you know, Obama apologized and all this fucking dick
that,
suck.
That would not stand.
And then it's like, well, I don't know about fucking apologizing for, you know, supporting a coup in the 1950s or whatever the hell it is that Obama did that, you know, got you so fucking upset. But I do know about not doing a thing while a foreign head of state, authoritarian, sicked his people on peaceful protesters in the capital of the United States. That's enough to make me feel like Ronald Reagan. Like, what is the matter with you?
Yeah. And, you know, again, I can't stress it. And these are the type of cats, the Erdogans, the Putins, the, you know, the Saudi crown prince, like those are the type of cats he's been cozying up to. Those are his favorite world leaders, like yeah. All of them. You know what I'm saying? Like his favorites, his closest world leaders are the authoritarian dictator types. Like time and time again, we've seen it. He's a great, strong leader. Love him. Love Erdogan. Gets it done. So, you know, man, I hope Enes Kanter is in good spirits and he's getting good advice and people are holding him down because this is scary.
Yeah, definitely. I actually talked. I have a friend who, you know, she's kind of like around him in a work capacity, like more on the media side. And you know, I was like, yeah, he's not doing any press right now. I wanted to get him on TMBS or on Woke Bros, actually.
Oh, that would be incredible.
Yeah, but I mean, right now, probably wisely, he's keeping a lower profile. But yeah, we need.
And then, of course, Erdogan has his own NBA player. He has Hidu Turkoglu, and Turkoglu released a statement that. Oh my God, Hidu Turkoglu is a former Sacramento King, Toronto Raptor, Orlando Magic. He went to the finals with them. He was on that famous Dwight Howard, Jameer Nelson, Rashard Lewis team, J.J. Redick, et cetera, et cetera, Stan Van Gundy. He now works for Erdogan, and he issued a statement basically just lambasting Enes Kanter and saying that he's involved with terrible elements and this, this, that, and a third. It's a fucking mess, man, a clusterfuck.
You know, that is pretty fucking incredible, man, because it's like,
he released a statement in like three languages, Mike. It was like German, Russian, Turkish, English. Yo,
maybe there's some pressure being applied to him back home or something, but it's like
he absolutely Turkoglu absolutely is on the payroll, like 100%. He's on the payroll of Erdogan.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's wild, man. That's about your own, like, you know, essentially former colleague. I don't know. That's wild.
And Knicks fans out there that are listening to the show, you want Enes Kanter playing right now because you want to lose as many games as you can because you need that number one pick for Zion Williamson, man. You know, not to stick the knife.
I love how, like, everybody's like, that's like the whole, like, if you tweet about Enes Kanter, the responses are all like, solidarity, we have to do something, or like, that's right. I mean, the only thing he terrorized was a Knicks win-loss record. Like,
exactly. People still everybody's think. In agreement there.
It's like, Jesus Christ. You're going to take the guy, these guys are trying to, they fucking, these people are, will stick a fucking, you know, 2-bit newspaper columnist in some prison where they'll get fucking pneumonia. They want to strip him out.
Still got a shit going.
And people are yeah,
they got a shoe on the Knicks takes no matter what. Yeah. It's Knicks fans, man.
Aaron Washington, hope he's working for Fethullah Gulen because the whole organization will crumble.
Knicks. Never. Wow.
It's a family outside of Turkey for you.
Yes.
Do you know that Mr. Gulen had anything to do with the 2016 coup attempt?
He has nothing to do with it because I was with him that night. And if you want to understand who did the coup attempt, you have to look at the benefits of coup attempt. And after the coup attempt, there is around 80,000 people on the jail, and 17 of them are women, and around 700 babies are in the jail right now with their families.
Let me ask you about your decision not to travel with your team to London. What specifically are you worried could happen if you went to London or traveled anywhere outside the U.S. right now?
Well, I was getting death threats almost once or twice a week. And after I made that London comment...
Where were you getting those threats?
Most of it on social media.
Okay.
And, you know, after I made that London comment, I was getting hundreds and hundreds every day. So I did not want to go to some foreign country that, especially in Europe, where Erdogan's long arms everywhere. And Turkish governments are very famous for hunting down people, especially in Europe. And he kidnapped around 100 people, community leaders, teachers, journalists. So that's why I did not want to go there and risk my life.
You're worried that you would be targeted by one of his supporters, either kidnapped or detained.
Definitely.
If you were to leave the U.S. If you believe his reach is that wide, how do you know you're safe here in the U.S.?
Well, I know there's laws in the U.S. and I believe U.S. that nothing can happen. And in U.S. and then but outside of U.S., I don't really feel safe anywhere else.
All right, man. Let's talk about Sopranos next.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, man. Look, I mean, there's not much to set up here. 20th year anniversary of the launch of the Sopranos. Definitely, you know, like, I'll just say, like, there's so many shows now, obviously, with, like, you know, the proliferation everybody talks about. And I actually, I think it was actually, I forget who it was, because on Back to Back, all the voices start to merge for me. I like all the voices, but I can't tell the white ones apart sometimes. Sometimes on Back to Back, I can only tell who you and Jade are, to be honest.
Because
I like everybody, but I know you and, but anyways, the point is somebody, that's my way of, because I feel guilty because I can't remember who made this point. But I think it was about that new Netflix show with Sandra Bullock.
The movie Blind Spot. Bird Box.
Bird Box, yeah, not Blind Spot.
No, she did a movie called Blind Side, and she's wearing a blindfold in the Bird Box poster or something. That was just my own individual fuck up.
Yeah, that weird paternalistic whatever. But but somebody was saying, like, oh, you know, it's good, but not as good as everybody says it was or something. And this guy was like, yeah, like, what are we doing? Like,
that was Zach.
Who said that?
Zach Harper.
Okay. Yeah. Zach Harper. All right. The brilliant. Man, Zach is great. And he's totally right about that. Like, this whole, like, proliferation of, like, the recap culture Everything is microanalyzed. And I'm at a point where, you know, there's some new shows that I like and I scope out, and shows I keep up with. I keep up with Billions. I keep up with Narcos. I like those shows. But my point, my long-winded point here is I'm skipping so many, and I'm rewatching the fucking Sopranos for like the third time, and it's better.
It's better. Exactly. It's better than you remembered it to be. And rightfully so, it gets the credit of setting off what they call the golden age of prestige television, of just like, yo, this isn't your cookie cutter procedural or sitcom or any of that. It's actually everything. It's breaking the rules. It's following a lot of those constructs. It's funny. It's heartbreaking. It's scary. It's suspenseful. It's smart as all hell. It's complicated. Like, these characters aren't just two-sided, good or bad. There's gray in there. These are 3D characters. And I know that's a cliche, but this is a show with three-dimensional people, three-dimensional universes, right? Where it's hard to tell who's the good guys, who's the bad guys, who to root for, you know. And it might change on a given episode, given season. You know, I know for me, and I say this all the time, and I'm actually rewatching The Wire too, and most people agree that The Wire and The Sopranos are the two best shows that were ever made.
I don't see an argument like any other opinion besides that is just contrarian bullshit.
Absolutely. And I'm somebody who loves Mad Men. I'm somebody who loves Breaking Bad. I think Game of Thrones, honestly, is in another – it's in a separate conversation, because what they're doing on that show, you just – you know, when you have a freaking ice-breathing dragon – on your show, like, you can't compare it to like the drama of a husband and wife, right? Like, a lot of the times this is what The Sopranos turns into. I just think my favorite thing about The Sopranos is that it's just like the layers of just family dynamics, right? Like, as somebody myself who has a big fucking sprawling family, like, all of the things, the themes throughout the show of Tony and his family, whether it be his mob family or his actual, you know, blood family, like, all of that shit rings so true. The little slights, the grudges, the, you know, the oaths, not even the oaths, but the traditions and all of this shit that we carry on through the years, like, all of that stuff rings so true to me, right? And Alan Sepinwall, the great TV critic, and Matt Zolasites, another great TV critic, they just dropped a book about the 20th anniversary. And what they're doing is like a close read, like a straight up film study class, right, of The Sopranos, which you can do with the show too, which I never been some kind of film buff, blah, blah, blah. I don't know about what this frame means and blah, blah, blah. But you can watch it like that too. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you wanted to nerd out and get into the nitty gritty of the technical stuff that's going on and the symbolism, like, it's got all of that too. So to jam all of that into a show that started in 1999, when TV was literally just like the most generic, predictable medium of art out there, it's just incredible.
And it's funny too, because even like on a, I don't know what year it came out, but even on like a smaller level, like it was big picture television and what people think television is, it was working against. And then smaller picture, like, I think that the Analyze This movie came out right around the same time. Yep. So it's like, oh yeah, like mob and a therapist. Like, all right, like, you know, sure. Like,
which was just straight up comedy. Still,
like, I liked that movie. I think it's funny, but that is not, you know, it was like, that was like, you know, De Niro's going to do his mafia thing and Billy Crystal's going to be a nebbish and like hijinks ensue. Like, the way even that therapist relationship, that was
groundbreaking stuff. And
that was very incredibly well done. I mean, I don't necessarily always agree with the worldview of the show. I think in some ways, I'm torn in between thinking that maybe we can do better as humans, and also, sure, or
being like, our flaws. We are
basically just selfish pieces of garbage, and we're gonna die, and that's it. But I mean, I think that, you know, but I also think, like, just even like, I think too, like, I don't want to overstate it, but politically, that's an amazing way of understanding the Bush era. It's definitely a great preview of the Trump era. I think you know, everybody can relate to it and love it, but I think definitely if you have any like tri-state New Jersey, New York experience, there's just the way they just get the language, the like I'm talking even on the level of like, right? Like I left New York when I was really little, but you know, my parents were obviously New Yorkers, and coming back here all the time, it's like, I can't even think of a good example, but or actually the clip we're going to play of Paulie Walnuts with his fucking Hasidim joke, like just the type of shit that like on one hand, they're like they're just rich suburban assholes. Then they're also murderous. And then they're also just like lame.
Jews, that's right. I knew there was something. Tony, you know that guy Titleman? Owns all that property. That motel down the street from the club. The Jew with the black clothes and the curls and everything?
They're called Hasidim.
Hasidim, but I don't believe them.
Right. And of course, you know, like the term anti-hero, especially as it relates to TV protagonists, gets, you know, it gets beat over the head nowadays. But again, like this is an authentic anti-hero, a genuinely bad person. They made this guy the protagonist of the show and they made you love him. Like on the fifth or fourth episode of the series, the guy kills a dude with his bare hands for no reason whatsoever. Like, you know, whatever. Spoiler alert, like the guy was a former informant. He informed the people on his associates and people that he know went to jail behind it. But like, literally, he didn't have to do it. The guy was gone, minding his business, blah, blah, blah. He just wanted to murder this dude and he did it with his bare hands. Like, nobody was doing stuff like that 20 years ago, not on TV. Right.
Do you remember I read about that? Do you remember how in that episode, and more spoilers, whatever, you should, even if it is a spoiler, you should watch it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, if you haven't watched The Sopranos by now, something's just wrong with you.
Right, exactly. And I don't even believe in spoilers anyways, but that's another conversation. But the scene though, the guy he killed, he basically, it's like a perfect Sopranos episode. He takes his daughter up to Maine to look at Bates and Bowden, like to look in Colby, like the three like nice, you know, top end leafy liberal arts colleges up in Maine. Shouts to Bates, Bates alumni, Bobcats, proud alumnus. But and so he's up there with his daughter, and that's like, you know, perfect McMansion suburban dad mode. And he sees a guy who was like in witness protection or something like that. And one of the only compromises they made on the show, I read about this or heard an interview, I think, with David Chase. I forget where but they basically added a scene where this guy who had been an informant and a rat who Tony ends up killing is, he also notices Tony. And so they added a scene where he's trying to enlist like some local junkie that he sells to go clip Tony. And right. And actually that had not been in the original script, but it was still early in the show where there was more susceptible to like pressure from other forces.
Yeah. Notes. Notes from up top.
Was like, you cannot, like, especially in the first season, there's a lot of likability in Tony.
Yep.
So they were like, you can't, like, you got to add something that you
know. They had to make that guy kind of a scumbag for the audience to be like, well, he kind of had it coming.
Right, exactly. And then as that show progresses, they took all the fucking padding gear off of Tony, man.
Oh, my God, man.
Whoa.
I mean, he's a lush. He's greedy. He's an adulterer.
He's a
murderer. He's a master manipulator. He's underdeveloped as an adult, like emotionally anyway. Like it's yo, man. He's a bad dude, bro.
He is a bad dude.
And through the end, we're all still rooting for him.
The best part of that show, man, is, remember, I think it's in season 3, maybe 2. where Carmella is going through one of her like crises of conscience. That's also another amazing character and acting job right there.
The best. I love Carmella. She's probably my favorite character outside of Tony.
Oh, wow. I gotta admit, my favorite character outside of Tony is probably some dumb shit like Polly Walnuts. Just because
Polly's great, I like Polly, but my favorite are Carmella and Uncle June because I know those people.
Right.
Like I know those people. Like when it comes to like just a strong headed, you know, woman, like a take no shit, like will tell you what's on their mind, all of that, which like sounds like a cliche, but you know, like I know that person. And like Uncle June, like the petty, older, curmudgeonly dude, like I know these people. That's why like they're my favorite, because like everything they do and say like rings true to my own life of people that I've encountered before. You know what I'm saying?
Right. No, I get it. It's all just, man, it's like a whole other tangent, because even like the way Uncle June, like they establish him so well as like this insecure, you know, ridiculous old man. But then it's like, oh, he's actually got, at the same time, he's actually very savvy. And sometimes he makes like, even sometimes ethically, actually, weirdly, he makes the right call. So it's I don't know that. But the only other thing I want to hit on it, and is it just besides all the appreciation for how great that show is, that scene where Carmella goes to the somehow she ends up going to this therapist. Right. And like everybody else, like it's longer, obviously, between Tony and his therapist. But kind of the lesson is like, you know, essentially the perspective that I got was like, you can't treat a sociopath, right? Like this isn't going to be the path for how you treat somebody who basically just doesn't have a conscience. And so you got like, you know, therapists that are naive and have their own agendas. And then you have like these ridiculous priest characters that basically don't know what the hell they're doing and just, you know, three Hail Marys, whatever. And she goes and she sees this old Jewish, therapist. And he basically just like – he deduces what she won't say directly. And he's just like, oh, your husband's in the mafia. Like, no, I'm not going to take your money. And you need to divorce him immediately. And that's it. And you realize like, oh, like basically the whole show is just pretty much telling you that that therapist is right. Like that – he summarized it. So even just, like the way they just drop these fucking like foreshadowings, I don't know, man. The show is amazing. Real quick though, I know we got to get off of this, but what did you think of the end of it? I know that was controversial for a lot of people. I think it worked.
It's fine. I love it. And you know why? Because I hate the idea of spoon feeding people closure. Like, no, I need a nice, neat ending wrapped up in a bow. I need to know exactly what happens. They end the show, meaning like the show is over. That's what I think the ending means to me. Like the show is over. And like, well, it doesn't need to be ended. The show is done. You're done. You've spent this much time with these characters. You have a pretty decent idea of what's coming next. You know, if Tony doesn't get killed at the bar, he'll get killed somewhere else, or the feds will finally catch up to him. Right? Like, we know how the story ends. It doesn't matter. Like, the point of the show is not the ending. We weren't leading up to some ending. They were just telling a story. You were spending time with these characters, and they were, you know, developing all these new things, you know, different things with them. And that was great. But the idea that they needed to have a clean ending for us all to have closure, it's like, it's so obvious to me what the ending is. Right. You don't need to be shown the ending. I love the ending. But, you know, at the same time, you know, with the caveat that I wasn't somebody who watched it in real time. I didn't watch The Sopranos in real time. I didn't watch The Sopranos for the first time until like, I want to say, shit, man, maybe 4 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, wow. All right. I didn't watch like it in real time either. But I watched it probably.
So I might have a different opinion of it if I watched it in real time. And I think it ended in 2007, which would have made me shit. I would have only been 20 years old. I probably would have been pissed. I don't think I would have been a sophisticated enough viewer of art or whatever you want to call it to be like, you know, get over it. But like when I watched it 4 years ago, and I watched the ending and like having like the totality of the series, like at my like in my brain, and I'm chewing over it, I'm like, that ending is fine. There's nothing wrong with that ending, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with all that completely.
And 100%. Some people are like, did he die? Didn't he die? I don't think he dies in the diner. I think that's the point.
Like, no, I agree. I think
the point of doing it at the diner is like their life is just going on after the show ends.
That's it.
They do the shit they always do.
And even down to the point that it's like a lot of like, it was really. Yeah, like all this carnage, this whole mafia war, but like, you know, yeah, it's just continuing going. It doesn't actually really affect Tony that much. And, you know, and also I think David Chase said, I don't remember, I'm only remembering like fragments of this, but I think he even said like, you know, and even the kids, like even though obviously like the kids don't follow their better impulses because at the end of the day, they're pretty thoroughly corrupted by their parents. They can't totally, but the truth of the matter is like, you know, they're better. You know what I mean? Like AJ is ridiculous, but he's not going to be out killing, you know, Meadows.
Right. She's going to get a straight job.
Yeah. She's going to be an attorney.
It'll be fine. She's
better than being like, you know, a sort of like a woman who sits and basically like passively relies on and actually really in some ways enjoys this mafia lifestyle, but also sort of like, you know, has all of these conflicts. I don't think Carmela's more complicated than it's fake, but you know, there's a lot of inauthenticity to her. So it's like, okay, you know, you upgraded, you went from, you know, a murderer and, you know, his like main wife, who's sort of like a co-boss in a weird way. And they got kids of like, you know, a delusional kind of like sub-performing boy who's like not evil, and a daughter who's going to be a fucking another sleazy tri-state lawyer. But all right, let's see what happens. Maybe they're – and then all that bearing in mind that the grandmother – tried to set up a hit on her own son, which right. Tony certainly wouldn't have done. Like Tony, I think,
right.
Like yeah, the 100%. One thing that I would say about Tony, right?
Yeah.
An evil, evil, evil dude. But I still thought at the end of the series, like, no, I don't think he would harm Carmela or his two children. I don't think he would do that. And that's already a slight progress over
that, progress. We all about progress here on the Woke Bros, man. We're about progress here. Real progressives here.
The beat down this weekend from an unexpected source. Right. Soulja Boy, who I think the last time I heard Soulja Boy, to be really honest, and it sounds like I'm throwing shade, but it's true, was when I was rewatching an Entourage episode in like 2012, and it was like some, you know, like it was like, hey Vince, do you want to go to Vegas? Yeah. Cool, they got the Maserati. Shut the fuck up, drama, whatever. And then Soulja Boy came in on the soundtrack.
That's amazing.
Like, honestly, like the last time I ever, and not because I didn't like Soulja Boy. It just, he hasn't at all been on my radar. And he's back making the rounds saying that he created Drake.
Look how he crossed over.
Yo, Meek Mill ain't beef with Chris Brown and was finna box with Floyd Mayweather.
He beef with Drake, the biggest rapper in the world.
These niggas, yeah, Drake. Drake. The nigga that got bodied by Pusha T? The nigga that hiding his kid from the world, but his world wouldn't hide from the kid? Arby Graham in a wheelchair? Drake?
Yes!
Y'all niggas better stop playing with me. Stop telling me like I ain't teach Drake everything he know.
Come on, you taught Drake everything he know.
Y'all ain't hear Drake on his first song. Tell me what's really going on. Drizzy Drake back in this thing already. What's hand? That's Soulja. That's my bar. Shit. He copied my whole fucking flow.
That's Kiss Me Through the Phone.
He copied my whole fucking flow. Word for word, bar for bar. Don't act like I didn't make Drake, nigga. Don't do that.
Right. Yeah, Soulja created Drake.
He created Drake. I love that, though. Like, shoot for the stars. Don't come out and be like, you know.
No, and legitimately, Drake used a Soulja Boy line or was like a line or two in a song that was a pretty big song. So, like, that legitimately happened, but...
Tell me what's really going on. Drizzy back up in this thing. I'm ready. What's happening? And then tell me what's really going on. Soulja Boy up in this thing. I'm ready. What's happening?
Two lines on one song does not a career make. Last time I checked, I don't know. I might be wrong. I might be making this up, Mike.
Well, you're not an objective source when it comes to Drake.
That's fair. I may not be objective, but that doesn't mean I'm wrong.
Exactly. Dude, I don't know. Like, look, I know Rob being the wise and judicious man that he was, he wanted us to actually note some of the things that maybe you could go over that Soulja Boy actually did do that actually was pretty important from kind of like a content and marketing.
Producer Rob, come in and educate the masses on the contributions of one Soulja Boy, Young Draco. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I kind of wanted you to flex on it more than me just because of the time frame. I think I was probably like 13, 14 at the time. Okay. So like when he started getting big. But
when Soulja Boy came on the scene?
Yeah. So like what was that, 06, 07?
Yeah.
So yeah, I was like 15 at the time.
I didn't even know he had been around, honestly, though. Oh, like,
yeah. And but that's the thing. I was only 16 years old at the time.
Wow.
Right. And the thing for me with Soulja Boy was like my ringtone. You know, he was the ringtone rap. He was the first ringtone rap dude.
Which a lot of people tell you was the downfall of this thing we call hip hop. Like that era specifically, the Laffy Taffy and the everybody's like, yo, once the suit started pushing that and just pushing the idea, like there was absolutely no reason to try. Just do that. This thing went another direction. That's what a lot of people feel like. I mean, you know, me personally, I still happen to really like rap. I'm not, whatever.
I still like rap. There's a lot of new rap that I like. And part of it, of course, is your age. But I also think some of it is objective, right? Like, I do think there is a reason that there are certain, like the 90s was a golden age of hip hop. There's also reasons even why to me, like, I don't know, like Dipset, their stuff from the fucking Bush era is still a lot more fun than a lot of stuff that just kind of dribbles out these days. And I guess that's actually, honestly, Rob, that was what I was going to say to you, not to like debate, because I think, but just to put it on the table, because it's like, yes, we can all just laugh Soulja Boy off and whatever. He's, you know, he made Drake. All right. Even I would acknowledge that that's ridiculous.
And we shouldn't be laughing at a guy who's clearly doing a lot of drugs.
Like, right.
It's like it's well, and I'm not saying that to be an asshole. Like he's doing a lot.
When we've been laughing at Kanye for a year. All of a sudden we and he's not even doing.
Yeah, but Kanye's not like
drugs he's not doing.
Kanye's not like wiping his nose as he does his Instagram live. You know what I'm saying?
True.
The way Soulja's doing it.
That's true. No, it's sad. But I think, but what I was going to say, and maybe this is honestly just like, I want your thoughts on this. And Rob, if you want to jump in too, because I think like, besides the obvious, like, okay, the conscience thing is the dude is fucked up. How much should we all be laughing at him? Then there's the like, all right, you didn't make Drake, like whatever. But the thing is to be like, okay, he was a pioneer of using social media, We talked about how he had, you know, a MySpace page, the, you know, ringtones, you know, all of this stuff. But then it's like it leads to what you raised, Waz, which is like, okay, but those innovations might not necessarily be have always set off the best trends in hip hop.
Yeah, and the thing is, man, it's the game is a lot more democratized now, right? In a sense that, like, you do, like, back in the days, in order for a rapper to have made it into my earphones, which is basically through the radio, some corporation had to back him first. Period. Like, that's just, you just could not break through without the backing of a major corporation, which is what the all the major record labels are and were. You know, the MySpace era, like, that whole Crank That, Soulja Boy, you know, as whack as we may think it is, that thing happened organically. It didn't happen in some boardroom and some marketing meeting and some, like, some kid made a dance, made a song, made the beat, uploaded it on his MySpace, and got millions of hits off of it. And was able to feed his family, move his mom out the hood, do all of this stuff, which is, like, it's a cool story right now. The ramifications of that, you know, some people may quibble, which is fine. Like, I don't, you know, I don't have a problem with that. But, like, you know, it's crazy, you know what I'm saying, to see where we've gone from 07 to now, where there's a such thing as a SoundCloud rapper, where there's a such thing as, like, you know, basically a huge currency is rap, whether it be 6ix9ine, whether it be Cardi letting her vagina breathe on Twitter or on Instagram or whatever. The currency is attention. That's eyeballs. Cool. And Soulja was one of the first to realize that courting internet attention, whether it be on YouTube, whether it be on MySpace, was currency and could get you paid and could get, you know, people looking at and hearing your music. Like, he was very pioneering in that sense. And again, like, you know, the stuff that's trickled out because of that, whatever, it's crazy, man.
I just equate him, and this is the best analogy I can put it. He's kind of the canary in the coal mine for the, all right, let's see if this social media stuff works with hip hop. You know what I mean? Like, let's try it out with this guy. If it works, all right, let's everybody else do it. Is his music good? I mean, majority of people say no. I'm in that company that says no. He's kind of like Lil B to me, and I hate to besmirch the bass god, but it's like, you know, that same kind of, all right, cool, this guy's really popular on the internet. You know, he's really popping. People like what he's doing, but at the same time, is he really like talented? No, but it's a good, you know, he does have a point. I mean, he was one of the first people on the internet, on social, on had a YouTube channel, you know, doing all the stuff that wasn't just, you know, what are these bars? Like, no, we want to know what Soulja's doing. We want to know what he's, right, you know, where he's at. And the best way to do it is through social media. So I feel like he was kind of like, not a gatekeeper, but he was, like I said, like a canary in the coal mine. Like, all right, let's go test this out. Let's see what happens. And if it works with him, here we go.
Dude, I remember the first time I was sitting on my computer, and I might have been on notright.com or something, and it popped up. It said, Joe buys Tahiri her first Benz. Literally, it was just a video of Joe Budden going to buy his girlfriend at the time a new car. And I just remember thinking, like,
what a cop.
What is happening to the game? Right. What are rappers doing? Like, what are you doing? We don't want this. But I was wrong. People 100% want this. And Joe was visionary for, you know, embracing the internet in that sense. Like, people do want to know what you have for breakfast, where you buy your sneakers at. You know what I'm saying? Like, what mic do you use? Blah, blah, blah. Like, people want to know everything about these people. And, you know, and that's where we are now. Where we're at the point where our president is, you know, tweeting about all kinds of different stuff. You know, it's not
I wonder, like, you know, I think we should explore all of this more in the coming weeks even. But I wonder if there's going to be, you know, within what is practically possible, because so much of this stuff, like, lives and breathes online, obviously. But I wonder if, like, some people that cultivate a little bit of, like, privacy and a little bit of, like, you know, maybe you don't know everything, you know what I mean? Like, maybe I, you know, maybe, like, artists and people who move a little bit more stealthily, I wonder if that, like, appeal could reemerge, you know what I mean? Like,
I mean, the only person who's doing it successfully is Banksy. That's it. Like, there's
we'll see.
And
we'll
some people like, might say, what's her name? Sia. She's doing it kind of successfully too.
I think she does. Sia,
the robots, Daft Punk. There's a couple of people who are kind of doing it successfully. Yeah. But by the way, Mike, for the most part, what social media proves is that people want to be seen. People want to have a lot of fans. People want to have a lot of adoration. Like, people want this. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a human impulse. That's what I think this stuff proves, is that as much as I judge my own self for how often I go on the gram, one, and how happy it makes me when something I post gets a certain amount of likes, it's just a fact, right? Like, I judge myself for it. Like, you can't possibly be this vain. But it's like, the fact of the matter is, when I see, you know, that group of likes, I just get like a endorphin hit. Like, oh, look at all these likes.
Oh, you get a literal endorphin hit. No? I mean, that's the way it's designed to manipulate the hell out of you. And speaking of which, like, I kept my gram private for, I guess, but now I'm actually more active on it. So Michael Jamal Brooks on the gram.
Here you go, Michael Jamal Brooks on the gram. On the gram. I'm at Big Waz on the gram. Yeah. Roboto, never know how to spell your name on the gram, Rob. You be messing up the game with that zero as an O nonsense you doing, man. You like one of those people with two underscores. Like, what are you doing, bro?
Just trying to make sure everybody knows you're getting the right Rob. That's it. Let's keep it tight.
Yeah. Awesome. Do we have anything else?
What's up?
Do you have anything else?
@_MichaelBrooks on Twitter.
Oh, there you go.
All right. I want to thank you, Waz, as always. I want to thank Rob Lopez, the man steering the ship. Of course, the evil genius behind it all, Jade Hoy, the whole Counted Dings, all of them. You know, everybody in the crew. I want to thank, of course, my TMBS people. And I want you to check TMBS out. There's a huge amount of content you get as a patron. And if you really want to move, you know, well into your sort of like political sophistication, but also have fun with it, especially as we head into this election season, patreon.com/TMBS. You could also go on YouTube, Michael Brooks Show on YouTube. We crossed our first 22,000 subscribers. Let's keep them humming. There's a lot of clips there now. You get a sense of all the things we cover, from the NBA to Brazil, from Kurdistan to voting rights, to us just fucking around and having a good time. You can find me every day on Majority Report. There's a whole bunch of places you can find me. Come see us at the live show. And of course, spread the word on Woke Bros. Woke Bros is, I know that these conversations are not only very fun, but also really important. I've always been a very big believer in the WLMB collaboration. And of course, Black Opinion Matters on Monday. So spread the word on it, give it a review, give it a rating, and check out all of the other great Count the Dings products. Get the Daily Ding with Zach Harper, like me. Listen to Back to Back Pod, which is fucking awesome. I know that there's a whole bunch of others, which maybe Waz can fill in a second. But I also want to tell everybody, get your tickets to the Count the Ding show at the Middle East in Boston for March. That's going to be dope. Boston's a nice town in a lot of ways. I kind of miss it. Not to live, but definitely to visit. And we'll see you next week.